black people who want justice. I'm for white people who want justice. I'm for Indian people who want justice. I'm for Latino people who want justice. I want a better world. And I don't give a fuck black people that world.
This podcast was recorded for the New African Black Panther Party by New Jersey Revolution Radio as part of our partnering organization programs. To learn more about New Jersey Revolution Radio, visit us on the web at www.njrevolutionradio.com.
Organization. We believe that capitalism, imperialism, white supremacy as systems need to be destroyed. We don't miss words with that. We think that people around the world, people in this country are suffering as a result of the bad policies of this imperialist system. And in order to get rid of it, we need to create a revolutionary organization. And reading revolutionary history, I know that you can't have a revolutionary organization without a revolutionary theory. You can't have a revolutionary organization without something that will mobilize and organize the masses of the people in a progressive, militant way. And for us, the New African Black Panther Party, no other group represents or embodies that ideology and principles and values than the original Black Panther Party. We think that we are a continuation of them, and we can say this out of our mouths all day, but our practice is what people is going to judge us by. We think that the original Black Panther Party laid down a model, a paradigm, from which all other groups can look, evaluate, and then extract successful practices from. And this is what we're trying to do today by launching the New African Black Panther Party as a revolutionary organization, at the same time giving to young people. Because this is primarily for young people. It's not for the New African Black Panther Party and the United Panther Movement or for the elders in this room. It's primarily for young people, so that way they know how to confront the contradictions in their community. And a lot of time for them, the contradictions can be housing, parents don't have food, it could be police brutality, it could be a bad school system. And they have to have in place a mechanism, a tool by which they can confront that. And so the New African Black Panther Party want to give them that information, so when they go back out to the community, they don't have to wait until adults say, "Let me advocate for you," or "Here's the program," or "Here's the policy." They can say, "You know what? I've been reading up on the Black Panther Party, and I know that little Bobby Hutton was 17 years old when he joined the Black Panther Party, when he joined this great and mighty struggle for social justice. So I could do it myself." And so this is what this forum and other forums is about. In fact, that is the main reason for the existence of the New African Black Panther Party, so that we captivate and give imaginative ways of confronting oppression to young people. You know, we had a demonstration the other day. It was an imaginative, wonderful, and raucous demonstration. Comrade Zaid was there with the young comrades there. We was in the front, and they was raucous. But we want to get even more raucous. You know, we want to engage in street theater. And the only way to engage in street theater, you have to have an understanding of what revolutionary culture represents. So singing, music, dance, young people know about that stuff. I know some of us who are older like to shy away from that kind of culture. But we have to embrace it if we want revolution to be on the menu. But if you want electoral politics to be the only form of politics, then revolution may not be what's for you. Embracing the New African Black Panther Party may not be for you, because we're going to engage in a multi-pronged attack upon our oppressor. And we think that street theater, we think that electoral politics will come in later on, but we have to build base areas right now in our community. And those base areas consist of bringing young people in so we maximize the talent they have in order to create people's power in our community. So this is what the New African Black Panther Party is trying to do. This is our first event, and we're happy. And before we get started explaining our ideology, I invited some original Panthers. And this is a wonderful opportunity because it shows in practice when you follow the correct political line. And for young people, you will learn about this terminology later on. Line is only mean ideology. When you follow the correct political ideology, you don't have to talk all day long. Your practice will talk for you. And others will see what you're doing, and they will respond in a productive way. And so having these comrades here say a whole lot. Because it means we founded this organization, the New African Black Panther Party, in a prison cell. We did something totally different from other organizations. POP was founded on the streets. People's Organization for Progress was founded on the streets. Other organizations, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, was founded on the streets. The Urban League was founded on the streets. Umoja was founded on the streets. The African People's Socialist Party was founded on the streets. The Maoist Communist Party was founded on the streets. But the New African Black Panther Party was founded in a prison cell. Two individuals wrote letters to one another back and forth in 2005. And this is the result of that exchange. We bring in what we founded in the prison system to the streets because we know that Pantherism is what we call the original Black Panther Party's practice, Pantherism, because we summed that up. We didn't sum it up. I mean, the original Panthers summed it up, but we adopted it. It's called Pantherism. Those are the best practices of the original Black Panther Party. Those consist of its revolutionary period and the Serve the People programs. We founded this in the prison system, and we captured the imagination of the prisoners. And it got so big. I'm telling you, this thing got big in the prison system across the country. Where we had to cease and desist recruitment, the same way the original party had to do in 68, or I think 69. Because all kind of people was joining the organization. Some was joining to extort and rob other prisoners because there was muscles there. Some was joining because they were afraid of being alone within the prison system. Some was joining because they wanted to sell drugs. And they was using the organization as a tool to cower prisoners into submission. So we had to cease and desist recruitment within the New African Black Panther Party, but we opened up the United Panther Movement. And all of these comrades you see over here, for the people that don't know that most of these young people belong to us, the United Panther Movement, they are part of the United Panther Movement. Young comrades there, the ones back there, the ones over there, are part of the United Panther Movement. And why do we bring them into the United Panther Movement as opposed to the New African Black Panther Party? There's a reason. And that reason is one of the successful practices of the original Black Panther Party. And that is, we have to bring in all kind of ideas within a democratic organization. So you may have a Christian that come in with Christian beliefs, a Muslim that come in with Muslim beliefs. You may have a secularist come in with secularist beliefs. But they have a burning desire in their heart to do something to ameliorate the harsh conditions in our community. And so we opened up the UPM to bring everybody in. It's a big tent. And out of the UPM, we will pluck cadre, or the best within the UPM for enrollment within the New African Black Panther Party. So we ceased recruitment within the New African Black Panther Party, but we opened it up within the United Panther Movement. And there was a reason for that, because the United Panther Movement don't require a higher level of discipline. It doesn't have strict discipline. You don't have to be dressed like me every day in a Panther uniform. You can come as you are. You can give us an hour, you can give us 15 minutes, or you can give us 7 days. Those are the requirements within the United Panther Movement. But over time, those who are committed, those who are dedicated, those who have that burning desire to do something will show in their practice. We say within the Black Panther Movement that, and we got it from Mao Zedong, Practice is the basis of truth. You can stand up all day and say, I want to do this and I want to do that. But if your deeds, if your walk is contrary to that, then you're not practicing what you're saying. That's how we judge an individual. We don't judge you on your skin color. We don't judge you because you're a white man or a white woman or an indigenous. When I used the word indigenous, I'm talking about the native people and the brown people that speak the colonial language of Hispanics. When I used the term indigenous, we don't judge you based on that. We judge you based on your ideology and your social practice. And that's what made the original Black Panther Party a threat. It wasn't just the Serve the People programs, which were mighty and powerful, but it was the fact that Fred Hampton developed the original Rainbow Coalition, not Jesse Jackson. He stole that from Fred Hampton. I'm going to tell it like it is. Fred Hampton said, we're going to organize the poor whites. We're going to organize our Latino brothers and sisters, or the indigenous brothers and sisters. We're going to organize the blacks. We're going to organize anybody. All they have to do is embrace the 10-point program. And they opened it up. In fact, Huey and others started the National Coalition to Combat Fascism. I think that was one of their democratic organizations. And they brought folks within that. And you have folks of all different hues and complexions working those organizations. So what we're trying to do is not adopt that and bring it back today. We're trying to take the best practices. And you hear a lot of that from Panthers within the New African Black Panther Party. The best practices. Because we do have criticism of our organization, and our organization is the original Black Panther Party all the way up until today. In fact, you can't be a revolutionary if you don't engage in what we call constructive criticism. You know, we can't have a comrade walking down the streets and professing to be about the people, but he engaged in bad behavior later on that night. We can't have that. And so the tool that affords us the opportunity to correct that behavior is what we call constructive criticism. And so that is the backdrop from which we're organizing this event. This is our first event. I'm super duper happy. It's like I have a woman who has given birth to my first child. Because if you imagine one piece of paper and one pen was primarily responsible for what we have here today and what we will have in the future. Folks didn't think, in fact, let me just tell you what the political prisoners said to us. And we have it documented in our books. We have two books out, Defy the Tomb and Panther Vision. Russell Maroon Schultz, one of our great comrades, he helped us establish our organization. He said in Defy the Tomb, a lot of y'all have these books, comrades have Defy the Tomb. Right there in the introduction, he said, well, when Shaka Zulu first wrote me, I said, well, I don't think it's good to call yourself Black Panther Party. And he said, the reason why I said I don't think it was good for y'all to call yourselves the Black Panther Party is because, not because of what the Black Panther Party did, but what it represents to the enemy within the prison system. He said that immediately you would be crushed. Immediately you would be crushed. And there was legitimacy to that line. Jaleel Mutakid, a wonderful comrade, he wrote to us and said he was on the opposite end of the spectrum. He said, I endorse and support what you're doing. Keep at it. Repression is going to come, but you can't give up. This is what he said. Mumia Abu-Jamal, a wonderful prince. Hopefully y'all, all of y'all know Mumia Abu-Jamal. I mean, he's everywhere. Got 11 books out right now. A political prisoner in Philadelphia, erroneously locked up in 1980 for a police killer. We call him a pig killer. I know that may make some of y'all wince, but we call them police pigs. That's what we're going to keep calling them. He was locked up in 1980 as a result of that. But come to find out, he didn't do it, the killing. He didn't do it at all. There's evidence to show that. But he didn't give up practicing pantherism because he was knocked off. He wrote 11 books. His latest book just came out called Empire by that dick. This is a prisoner. It's about that thing. Empire. They're going to have a launch next week. In fact, you're going to the launch. Conrad Ozay is going to the launch of Mumia's latest book. So what I'm saying to you is that we didn't just do this in isolation. We consulted with the great masters. And that's what we call our political prisoners. Because they fought for you and I.
That's right.
They put their lives on the line. Mm-hmm. They died. We lost 30 Black Panthers to pig violence. That's what I'm telling you. 16, 17, 18-year-olds shot down by the government of the United States because they wanted to feed a poor person who was hungry. Or because they wanted to establish a decent education in our community. Or because they wanted to stop rats and roaches from biting babies at night. The government found that to be a crime. And shot these young brothers and sisters down. 17, your age. 17 to 18 year old. Bobby Hutt was only 17. This guy here, 25 years old when he founded the Black Panther Party. 25. He ain't my age. I'm an old man. They're old men. They was your age. Young people throughout history are the movers and shakers of revolution. The locomotive force that knocked down barriers. You know why young people are that way? Because they're impetuous. And they're creative. And they hate when old people tell them, slow down a little bit. They hate that. Who want to slow down in the face of injustice? I don't want to slow down. I know you don't want to slow down. You're tired of going to sleep at night hungry. You're tired of going to a school that don't teach you how to be enlightened, but teach you to learn a test, to take a test. You're tired of the police jumping out of the car and saying, get against the wall because we think you're a suspect. You may be carrying a gun or you may be carrying drugs. You're tired of that. And as a result, when people politicize you, give you that knowledge of self, you go out into the community and you scare folks because they want you to move slow. They want you to move according to their pace or they want you to practice their agenda. But we're here to tell you, the New African Black Panther Party wants you to move as quick as you want to move, but with discipline, with ideology, with structure. Because we have forces out there that we all have to fight against. All of us are obligated. I don't care. You could be 80 years old to 1 year old. All of us are obligated because this world that we live in cannot be destroyed without participation of every hand in this room. All of us can't do the same thing, but all of us could do something. Could do something. That's why the political prisoners, they write the comrades on the street. Most of these comrades that are writing to political prisoners were political prisoners. You know, political, let me just explain that before we turn it on to the great comrade that came here today. A political prisoner is someone that was captured for practicing their political ideas within a society that frowns upon that. That's a political prisoner. So if we out there demonstrating like we did the other day, down Broader Market, the police could pull us over and throw us in prison and say we broke their rules. That's a political prisoner. When you're in prison because you practice a set of political beliefs that they don't like. And some of you may become political prisoners because revolution is illegal in the United States, and it's illegal around the world. I'm gonna tell you like it is. The Black Panther Party is not an organization for cowards. It's not an organization for weak, spineless individuals. You know, these people were bold, fearless, they spoke the truth, and they put their bodies on the line to serve our poor and suffering people. And that's what we wanna do today. We wanna put our mind, we have a saying called mind, body, and soul. The original Black Panther Party have a saying, mind, body, and soul. That means everything that you do, wherever you go at, you push this pantherism. You don't go to a debate and do you allow the person you're debating to tell you to drop pantherism and you be all of a sudden become someone who adopted their philosophy. No, we call it holding the banner of pantherism. Wherever you go at, there are going to be people to tell you what you're doing is wrong. They're going to tell you that. The media is going to paint us, and I'm telling you this because we have a paradigm, a model from which to judge this stuff. I'm not speaking in abstract, in theoretical terms. The media will paint us in the most dirtiest light. They will call us criminals And that's what I was. I'm not afraid to admit that one time I was a criminal. You know, I was in prison. I did 21 years as a result of preying on the people. But the enemy is going to convince some of us that's the only part you need to see of Shaka Zulu. The Reformation, the struggle, the revolutionary, none of that. So what I'm telling you is that the media is going to use their hammer to separate us in the future. And we can't allow that to happen. So this is our baby. We're excited. We're happy. And hopefully we continue to grow and evolve. And with that, I'm going to call up here Comrade Atnall to give us a history, his participation within the original Black Panther Party.
All power to the people.
All power to the people.
I was part of the Black Panther Party in New Jersey as a result of meeting with Panthers at the Conklin Hall, Rutgers Conklin Hall takeover. They were the only ones that were providing security for the students that had taken over the building. But not only that, they were also active in the medical school building and seeking health care for the community, which Newark was in dire need of. As you know, Mayor Gibson passed away, and one of his primary starting goals was to provide health care for a very sick city. But the Black Panther Party was a national organization at that time, and we exposed not only sexual diseases, but also we were also bringing into light on a national scale sickle cell. A lot of people weren't aware of the fact that African and Mediterranean people suffered from sickle cell. So it was not only medical issues that the Black Panther Party brought up, aside from the breakfast program, which is now, as you can see, is a national institution. Children go to school, and that's what first thing they get in order to strengthen their bodies and create their minds to function in an educational environment. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about the New Jersey chapter. New Jersey chapter left some things behind after its destruction by the U.S. government, because everybody understands that the goal of the Black Panther Party was to overthrow the government in order to make a government that was susceptible to the people and to be controlled by the people. One of the things that happened along the way was that we created political prisoners, and we still have political prisoners inside institutions that incarcerate the people. Now, one of the goals of what I'm a part of now is the Black Panther Party Commemoration Committee. And what we do is we try to raise funds every year for defense, not only court defense, but also for commissary for political prisoners that are still incarcerated. We've had some success, and that we not only got some Black Panther parties, veteran Black Panthers released, who were also part of the Black Liberation Army. And as a result, we got Herman Bell freed. We got Seth freed. The Angola Three freed. Thank you. We still have about 13 more Black Panthers that we tried to seek freedom for. So what we do every year is we hold a film festival, and we try to raise funds to do this type of work that needs to be done, because we won't be satisfied till all of them are free. That's right. And that's one of our slogans is free them all. Free them all. I can get a free them all from everybody.
Free them all.
Free them all.
Thank you. So every end of September or beginning of October, we have a program. I do have some pamphlets from last year. It was our 10th year of having this film festival. But we also, we appreciate anybody that can write to political prisoners, because you know, they will respond to you. And if any advice or anything you have or any questions you have, they will give it to you. One of our longest political prisoners is Chet Fitzgerald, who's still serving in California. But we also have...
Tell him how much time you got there, comrade.
He has about 38 years. We have here, well, not C Squire. I known him as C Squire, but Sudiata Akoli was, he just wrote to me a month ago, and he was explaining how he appreciated the work that Sister Dawson does, the paintings of political prisoners.
Sophia Dawson.
Yes. And, you know, he'll write back to you if you send a letter to him. So, you know, we have Ed Poindexter in Nebraska, Joseph Bowen in Pennsylvania, Anthony Bottom in New York. You mentioned Russell Maroon Schultz. Some of these brothers are sent to other institutions, not just New Jersey. Like Macaulay wrote me from New Jersey, but he was sent back to Maryland. So we have Freddie Hilton, Lorenzo Bowers in North Carolina, Kenny Whitmore in Angola, Louisiana, and of course, you know, Mumia in Pennsylvania, and Jamil Amin, who everybody knows as H-Rap Brown. He's currently in Arizona. I have a couple of these left if anybody wants to review them. This year, we have even better films that we show. You know, the bottom line is that there was a survey taken, and it was unfortunately found that black people happen to be the most entertained people in going to the movies. They like going to the movies. So we use this as a vehicle to try to educate people. So you find that most of our movies are based on documentaries and are based on historical fact. This year, we're gonna have a movie about Cuba and how Cuba released Mandela. It was not the nice South African apartheid government. It was Cuba. As a result of getting out of Angola, agreeing to leave Angola, that everyone had agreed, all the colonial powers had agreed that if Cuba left, they would free Nelson Mandela. So the Cuban people are the real people to be thankful that Mandela was released and that South Africa was finally free of apartheid. Mm. But also, in turn of that, we have to concentrate on the next oppressed people, which happen to be the Palestinians. Palestinian people have been put in a jail known as the Gaza Strip.
Try.
And even if they tried the tactics of Martin Luther King in their march to freedom in the north of Gaza, you see what the results are, that they're murdered like people in Sharpsville, South Africa, because of the apartheid system in Israel. So we're going to try to educate the people. We're going to try to, you know, get people out. You know, we don't want to preach to the church. We want new people, new faces.
That's right. That's right.
And this is the only way we can educate people, you know, through the, you know, you might have social media, but, you know, I'm an old school guy, you know. You know, you guys call me, you know, original gangster, but to me, it's just an old guy. I'm the old guy. And the old guy, you know, I remember when churning out the mimeograph machines and, you know, and you kids with the social media. So, you know, I want to make sure that some of the young people get some of our required reading, because education is important. You know, it's the foundation of our survival. Is if we don't know about anything or we can't do anything about anything, we can read about it and find out about it. So, you know, I'd like to give some of the young people our party book writing. That used to be our book writing list. And I see we have a lot of young faces here, and I want to... I want to see if we got some people that that can answer some questions.
How many black members are currently incarcerated?
We have about 13 left of original black members.
That includes Rep Brown, right?
Yeah. Includes Rep Brown. There's a mailing list of addresses on some of those journals for the film festival. It's probably your only thing. But
how many original members are still in exile?
There was one in Portugal, and. Aside from Asada Shakur, one of our comrades just passed away.
The comrades in Tanzania.
Show that people there.
But I want to see if I can quiz any of the young people. Any of the young people know who the Minister of Information was?
Okay, Conway.
No.
Algiers Cleaver?
Yes. Algiers Cleaver. Because you know that, I'm going to give you, courtesy of the U.S. government, courtesy of the U.S. government, I'm going to give you a chart. A chart of...
Oh, that's wild, the history of the structure of Black Panther.
Yeah.
That was a chart that COINTEL created to track us down.
Wow. Could you hold that up a second? Could you hold that up for the... I mean, it's hard to see from the distance, but... Thank you.
Does any of the young people know who was the only conscientious objector? That was not.
Is he good this one?
Only conscientious objector that was refused a draft from the army.
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali. Okay, all bounds to the people. There you go, John.
You know, a lot of people aren't aware of that because Muhammad Ali was a political, because he was a conscientious objector, that he was the only religious person that was refused induction, that was refused not being a part of the army during the draft. And I mean, they allowed Quakers, they allowed, but it was a special order under COINTEL,
right,
from the Justice Department.
That's right.
Come on, brother.
To make sure that he was put in jail as a result of his not being inducted into the Army. Does anybody know who the Minister of Culture was from the Black Panther Party?
Douglas.
Okay,
you can't get to Emory Douglas. Emory Douglas. Okay. But I know, here's an easy one for the young people. Now, only the young people answer this. Who is the chairman of the Black Panther Party? The co-writer of the 10-point program.
The chairman.
UEP Newton was Minister of Defense.
Yes.
Who? You're going to have to start reading.
What did you say? In the white. Oh, young lady in the white. I'm right here.
Oh, me? No, I got it wrong.
Who you say?
I say Bobby Sims.
No, you got it right.
Thank you.
Y'all make sure y'all read that book list now.
Okay, who was known as Soul Dad Brother? Who's head of the Black Panther Party chapter in Soul Dad Prison in California?
You want just the young people?
Yes, the young people.
Yeah, right? I would have got Muhammad Ali.
I have to start reading that list.
George Jackson.
All right.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, all power to the people. I hope I motivated the young people to start hitting that list. And you know, this way, they have some answers to the questions because, our curriculum and our school system doesn't really educate us on political thought or in our culture. So, this is the reason why people always ask me, what should I do to be more involved? I say, well, run for your school board. Run for your school board and find out what they're teaching your kids. Because you'll never know what they're teaching your kids because all they do is they want to pay, the teachers, not that the teachers, don't deserve to be paid. But, they want to work on budgets. And they want to make sure that the superintendent gets a big salary. But then never do they concentrate on what's going inside the kids' heads. They treat the school systems like factories. All they do is they put the teacher there to make widgets. And then the principal's there, he's the foreman. And then the superintendent stops by every so often to see how production is done. And there's a lot of bad production going on.
That's right. Bad.
They can't take education from you. That's the reason why I say if you become a member of a school board, you have some control over what's going into their head. Although it's a 50-50 deal, at the school board, the school board controls half of what goes into the system, and superintendent makes the other half of the decision. But I always tell them, school boards are very simple. You don't need a lot of money. You just need a lot of footwork. You need to be around people because this is our future.
That's right.
If we don't concentrate on our future, then that's the reason why we stay where we're at. All power to the people.
New school board election, April 16th.
We want to thank Comrade Atnoff for that wonderful talk. It was real informative. Before we move on, I just want to acknowledge a new member of the New African Black Panther Party, not the United Panther Movement. She came all the way from Delaware. She's a part of the New African Black Panther Party, which is the leadership wing of the United Panther Movement. Come on and stand up, Comrade Teresa. Those are wonderful kids right there. All the way from Delaware. Now that's what we call commitment.
That's right.
Yeah. Commitment. That yeah. She's from Delaware. She ain't from down the street. Where I live at. I live down the street. I just walk here. She came from Delaware. You know, so thank you, Conrad, for coming. Before we move forward, we want to bring our comrade up here from the United Panther Movement. He's going to read the 10-point program. So young people know what the 10-point program is. This is what we're fighting for right now. And Conrad Poppy is going to read it to y'all. Come on up, Conrad.
How y'all doing this morning? I don't think it's morning time anymore. It's 1 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock, so I'm Poppy Robinson. I can't read y'all the 10-point program of our revolution. First program, the first point of our program is we want power, we want freedom and power to determine the destiny of our black and oppressed communities. Meaning we want freedom to determine our future. We want to control our own future. We don't want the government or these institutions that's not really teaching us to determine where we land in life and in society. Second one, we want full employment for our people. We want the right jobs for our people. We don't want these little BS jobs where you get minimum wage. We want jobs where we could make a living, where we could pay for things, where we could pay for our children tuition, where we could pay to get out of our neighborhoods like these, where we could make these neighborhoods better.
That's right.
We want better working employment. Mm-hmm. We want an end to the robbery by the capitalists of our black and oppressed communities. We don't want the capitalists to come inside of our neighborhoods and take things from our neighborhood, because this is our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We can't let the government come inside our neighborhood and take things out of our city. So we want to stop being robbed by our capitalists. We want decent housing fit for the shelter of human beings. We want houses where we can live in, we can afford, we can pay for, and shelter for homeless people. We don't want to see homeless people out here on the streets in winter times, cold, starving, needing somewhere to be. The fifth one, this is my favorite one right here. We want decent education for our people that opposes the true nature of this decadent American society. An education that teaches us our true history and a role in our present day society.
That's right.
We want to learn something. As students, I can speak for students, because in school we get, it's a certain limit we reach where it's like, we know like we not really getting teached anything. We want to learn our history. We want to learn where we came from. We want to learn like what's been going on. We want to learn about our ancestors, what they've been going through. Because
right.
It's a certain limit in school where we know like it's BS. Mm-hmm. We already know like that's not what we really want to get into.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Six, we want completely health care for all black and oppressed people. We want to feel like we're the ones being taken care of. We pay taxes in this city. We pay taxes in this state. And we should feel like we're being taken care of. We want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people, other people of color, and all oppressed people inside the United States. As we all know, police brutality is a really big thing, not just in Jersey, in America. Police brutality been going on since Bobby Hutton, matter of fact. So we want to end of that. Eight, we want an immediate end to all wars of aggression. We want to stop fighting wars that we don't need to be fighting. We have a lot of wars that we've been fighting in just to take other people's things.
That's
just
right.
To take oil and other resources that we don't really need, but we could be spending money on education and other things. Killing babies, like she said, killing people that's...
That's wrong, brother. Come on. Proud member. Come on,
bro. We want freedom for all black and oppressed people now held in U.S. federal, state, county, city, and military prisons and jails. Furthermore, we want trials by jury and peers for all persons charged with so-called crimes under the laws of this country. Like our political, our politic prisoners, We want fair trials. We want people to be in a jury that look like us. We don't want to see the white juries that's always playing us guilty. We want a free trial. And the last one, we want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, peace, and people's community control for the modern technology. That's a 10-point program for the new African Black Panther Party.
Wonderful. And this is what younger people need to see. You enumerating this 10-point program is inspiration for young people everywhere. Because you're making it cool, you're making it hip, and you're interpreting the 10-point program to fit into the conditions that exist for you as young people. That's how you win your other people over. You speak to their needs. We have a saying in the movement that ideology must be built around concrete conditions. That means that what's in your head must be able to interpret the conditions in your community so other people can understand it. And that's what the 10-point program does. It gives people a benchmark from which they can judge what we're doing as an organization. So if we want housing, then we got to get out there and get some housing. You know, we ain't got to wait on welfare to give us Section 8. We ain't got to wait on other people to give us anything. You know, we pool what little resources we have to get housing. Like, a good part is education, your favorite part of the 10-point program. You could open up a garage and bring all the young people, your friends, into that garage and teach them a 10-point program. You could do it in your living room. You could do it wherever you at, because the basis of education is not determined by being in a public school sanctioned by our entity. Education is determined by how we teach one another. And that 10-point program, you enumerating that, will convince and inspire other young people around the world to get with this revolutionary thing. We got to make revolution hip, too. Mm-hmm. It can't just be boring and dull. Folks will turn away from that. You know, let me tell you one of the most important attributes besides ideology of the original Black Panther Party. It was this black leather jacket. It was the black beret. And it was their swagger with it. You know, it was cool. So when folks approached them, they thought they were just talking to someone that was hip and cool. But the brother said, "Do you know the 10-point program?" And he said, "Oh, let me get away from this guy here." You know, or the system. You read Elaine Brown's Taste of Power. They was at a party, Bobby Seale and the Panthers was having a party, a little party that we have. And one of the brothers pushed up on the sister. You know how we do. They pushed up on. And the sister said, "You know the 10-point program, brother?" She said, "What?" He said, "What?" He said, "Do you know the 10?" He said, No. Well, you can't be talking to me then. Learn that 10-point program and then come back to me. You see what I'm saying? Immediately, the sisters established values, boundaries. They said, "You want to talk to me? Get hip to what's happening in our community. Fight in this struggle for justice. Fight in this struggle for equality. Fight in this struggle to establish a new world that is geared towards our humanity and not profit." That's how you win people over. That's how you spread the philosophy of pantherism. And with that, I want to bring up a young cub. This is how we talk about, for one, and the Dave, incidentally, the Dave is called from 1966 to 2019. The continuity of the Black Panther Party, from the original Black Panther Party to the new African Black Panther Party. This is the theme of this event. We just didn't have a lot of money to make it look like that. You know, we're poor. We're a poor organization. So, but that is the theme, and the cub is the continuity, the continuous process of passing information from one individual to another, from one generation to another. So this, he represents the cub of the original Black Panther Party. Come on up here, Comrade Zaid Muhammad.
All power to the people.
All power to the people.
Thank you, my brother. I really appreciate you. I was laughing
when you said young comrade, because out of the family it comes, I'm probably the oldest. Look, man, I probably should explain that first, but I want to just thank you, young man, for what you're trying to do. You're coming from inside the walls, held on to what you got from inside the walls that made a difference in your life, that turned you around, and you're trying to make a difference. And understanding that you stand on some very courageous shoulders, and there's some very serious dues were paid by those who had those shoulders. So I want to appreciate you, and if any I can help you in any way I can, that's what us old heads are for. Mm-hmm. All right. I was trying to figure out what I was going to say, because you got some of my elders here who really I really want to hear you, Brother Cap. I haven't heard you get down yet, and I know you're sitting. No, I haven't.
You missed my address to the Panther Club.
Yes, I did. Yes, because I had my kids in Irvington, but he's another master teacher in the house. Let me just say, let me tell you a library story that's gonna crack you the hell up, right? And this began my cub journey. And I should say this: we say cubs, they're biological cubs, the children of the Black Panther Party. The biological children of the Black Panther Party. And they're the first line of the Cubs, right? And they have a very special place because they went through everything their parents went through when their parents came under fire by the government.
That's right.
Right? All the trauma that their parents faced, they had to internalize as children. Parents going to prison, still in prison. Mm. Chip Fitzgerald been in prison since 1969. Do the math. Do the math. That's 50 years.
That's right.
50 years. Imagine what that did to his children. We could go, Bobby was a baby. He was only 17, but some of the other martyrs had children. Right? So that's a special part. I'm not a biological cub. And I need to explain that because that's something special that they went to, and we covered down on them for that. I'm a cub from some of the other elders who came out and did other work in the Panther tradition. I came up under some two very hardcore. I'm a New York cub, basically. But the two Panthers that I've worked under especially closely with Daruba Bin Wahad.
All power to the people.
And the late Safia Bukhari Austin.
All power to the people.
Okay? Exactly. Daruba was a field secretary for the Black Panther Party in New York and went into the Black Liberation Army also. When we had this thing called a split that took place, and they did some underground work, and then some of them paid the price for doing that underground work. He did 19 years in prison in New York State. When he came out with a mandate from his comrades in prison to put together a campaign to get the rest of his comrades out, and that was called the Campaign to Free Black and New African Political Prisoners. And for those of you who are into entertainment, right? Usually when you got a big star who's getting ready to come on, then you have an opening act. I was Daruba's opening act. Right? Because I had been doing Panther political education community work for a long time prior to that, and the New York Cubs, the New York Panthers were very possessive of the work that I was doing in that way. Safia Bukhari was also in the New York chapter. In fact, she went in 68 was a big year in terms of Panther growth, right? Witnessing an encounter of police brutality, and Safi was a very bougie church-based sister who couldn't, conceptualize that, in America where you're supposed to have democracy and people supposed to go to work and go to school and go to church, that the police would do that thing until she witnessed it. And then when she walked up on it and began to question it, she found herself getting her ass whooped by them same police. Pardon me for being frank like that.
Right?
That ass whooped and put her into the Black Panther Party. Mm. Right? That put her into the Black Panther Party. And when things got wild and she went underground with the Black Liberation Army, she was a serious combatant in the Black Liberation Army. Was captured, was actually on death row for several years when she was in captivity. When she came out with this same fire. This work we got to do to get our comrades out. Well, I was one of the first ones that she grabbed. Under Safia, we had the paper out for a few years. And Lord, if we had just kept it out for about two more years, it would have gone into digital territory. This is library, right? And you young heads, you understand what digitizing of archives means. The paper would be in a different place. I had a field day with that paper. These young brothers here that just walked in the Nation of Islam, I have nation roots, right? We know how to work a paper. So when that paper came out, I was all up and down the streets from Connecticut down to Washington, D.C. All in the street with that day. And I would grab folks, let me show you how to move this goddamn paper. Let's go, we got a paper. Right? And writing for that paper was all that good. Oh, that was my favorite comic experience. Right? But I said I was going to tell you a library story. Back in 1988, a book came out called Sada.
Come on, brother.
Right? Sada, an autobiography. Bad little sister in the New York chapter of the Black Panther Party. Okay? Don't call her Joanne.
No.
That's like calling Muhammad Ali Cassius Clay, man. Right? Sada, right? And I've had to correct a lot of folks over the years on that one, sir. Right? Her name is Sada, right? She was captured and almost killed right here in New Jersey on the turnpike. Exit 9, down there in New Brunswick Way. Right? Hands up, don't shoot.
That's right.
Little Bobby had his hands up on that fateful day back in 68.
That's right.
Huh? Sada got all the evidence. Hands up. Scared pig started firing anyway. Not only did he just start firing, he was so pumped up with his racism, his hate, and his fear.
That's right.
He not only shot up the place, he got back in his car and left his so-called state trooper comrade. They use that language too. Be careful. Yeah. Right? Left him there and lied about the whole thing, and they still jammed the Sada and Sundiata up for what happened to Werner Foster, was his name. And nobody talks about Zaid Shakur, the other Panther BLA member who was killed in that whole scenario too, trying to protect her. Trying to protect her, and he was a gifted organizer. Zay was a gifted organizer, one of the best negotiators on the ground in the streets when it came to, you know, working with other organizations, coalition building, working with so-called street organizations, right? There's certain ways you got to engage folks like that. Zay was one of the best out of that cadre of Shakur's that came out of New York.
That's right.
Right? Those are the folks that I did my stuff for and still do my stuff for. I named my only biological child after Safia. Safia went to the land of the ancestors in August of 2003 while my child's mother, who I met in the new Black Panther Party, a black woman teaching self-defense. Ladies, y'all hear what I said. She was a Taekwondo master whose weapon of choice was knives, who was teaching self-defense. So don't let no brothers push up on you with what Sada calls no he-man backwardness.
Ooh, right? Come on, brother.
No.
Say that again.
When it comes time to train, ladies, you train just as much as those brothers train.
That's right. That's right.
With everything.
That's right.
Your hands, your feet, your mind, and everything else. Right? A liberated woman is a liberated woman, daughters. Going all over the damn map.
Come on, brother.
I ride like that, y'all forgive me. I'm going to give you some old stuff too. Right? I have something, and this is also a part of our political prisoner support work. When the Disney movie Black Panther came out. Disney movie.
That's right. That's right.
That showed you how valuable and special the CIA is in saving our civilizations. See, study is important, babies. I'm trying to tell y'all something, right? Disney is not going to show you what it is to be a Panther in the Panther tradition. Hollywood is not going to do that. White supremacy is not none of that, or what you need is going to come from that, right? When that happened, we made a conscious effort to seize that moment, right, to create what we call a teachable moment, to teach to all those folks who are excited about that good-looking Disney movie, and that's what it was. It was a good-looking Disney movie, and it captured our imaginations because it rose look good doing all that shit and all that, yeah! And all that shit look good! CIA has never been a friend of African people everywhere on the earth. People want to understand covert activity of this government upholding white supremacy, upholding capitalism, upholding our efforts of our people to be free all around the world. You have to understand that the number one tool to deconstruct and destroy that over the years has been the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States government. Right? So we decided at that time to come up with a series that we call the Real Panther Series. Right? So we did a showing of the Angola 3 flick down at the library, and on the back of our cards we put out stuff on who the real Panthers are. Baby, just take one and pass them around. On the back of that is Sundiata's bio, right? And I'm saying that too because I want y'all to appreciate Sundiata in a very practical and local way.
Right.
Because Sundiata was captured and convicted here in New Jersey, and Sundiata, let me back up on Sundiata for a minute, because you should know who these folks are. Sundiata was a computer and math whiz.
Working for NASA.
Coming out of Texas, coming out of the heart of Prairie View, Texas, was recruited by NASA in the early 1960s for his brilliance, right? Y'all saw the Hollywood, remember the movie Hidden Figures, right? And all them brilliant black women who went into NASA because of their math smarts. Well, there was another hidden figure, and his name was Clark Squire, better known to us as Sundiata Okoli.
That's right.
Right? And stifled by the limitations of that incredible opportunity for that time, old heads understand what I'm talking about when I say that. Right? He heard the drum of struggle in 1964 that was called Freedom Summer. Right, Freedom Summer was a big national campaign to bring folks from the North into the South to help move the civil rights movement forward, and it was a mixed race strategy, meaning that they brought a lot of white folks into the South, hoping that their presence would calm down some of the violence from the other side.
Yeah.
They was wrong. It didn't calm down the violence. White folks got killed right along with black folks in that. But it was a strategy based on how that kind of stuff plays out and who decides who deserves protection and support and all of that. And it was a tactic that had its place. So Sundiata answered that drum. But seeing the limitations of nonviolence and seeing the limitations of the civil rights movement, when other organizations began to take that sharper left turn, SNCC, for instance, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee that's associated with Imam Jamil, formerly known as H.R.A.P. Brown, when those organizations started pushing left and really taking this beyond nonviolence, right, and ultimately an organization would come out of the West Coast called the Black Panther Party, going well beyond nonviolence, Sundiata went further and found himself in the Black Panther Party.
That's right.
Right? Brilliant man, and somebody who has one of the highest levels of government security clearance in the Black Panther Party drove the United States government nuts. I want y'all to understand what I, as y'all do more study, you'll appreciate what the hell I'm trying to say. But the prospect of somebody that had access to some of their top technology and stuff, running with them niggas with guns, talk about all power to the people.
Come on, brother.
We got to get hold of this boy, and we got to send them a message about him, people like him. And then, of course, the party goes through its change, the split, BLA, da-da-da-da-da. Sundiata joins the ranks of the BLA, right? And is with ultimately Asada and Zaid on that fateful day, and it's captured, right? Sundiata Okoli is now 81 years old.
Mm.
He has been in prison for 45 years. Check this, though. I'm going to wind up. Several years ago, a federal judge okayed him for parole.
Send him home.
Okayed him for parole.
Catch this now. Catch this.
But you got to go back before your parole board in New Jersey to get clear. As far as I'm concerned, you did your time. You're okay. He goes before his parole board and gets a 20-year hit. 20-year hit. Totally against the law, totally unprecedented, but in the insistence of making that example of him, that J. Edgar Hoover said, if you want to be a revolutionary, you're going to be a dead revolutionary.
Come on, bro. Tell him, young
right?
Tell him.
They've been dragging this thing out for Sundi Ata for years. And now, at the back end of this process, he went up for parole a year and a half ago. They shot him down again, gave him another 5-year hit. That's being appealed. He will likely be up for parole next, within the next year and a half or so. And we need to create a groundswell of support for the release of Sundi Ata Okoli. Is any clergy in the house? Okay, because there's a place for clergy, you know, in this stuff.
That's right.
There's a place for everybody in this work, right? And I'm saying that because we started a strategy. It's called Clergy for Sundi Ata campaign. We're trying to get at least 45 clergy people, mostly from New Jersey, to come out for his release on humanitarian grounds. Right? But more often than not, when Sundi Ata goes before the parole board, or any of our, you know, PPs go before the parole board, they go simply on their record. Right? But when you have campaigns behind people, right, you have community, you have stacks of letters from the community, stacks of letters from clergy, stacks of letters from elected officials and whatnot. That's what our Boricua, and where my Boricua's at? This is a Boricua community. Right? I want y'all to appreciate the work that the Boricua community did with the release of their political prisoners.
That's right.
Unlike in our community, the Boricuas organized every sector of their community, and from their mealy-mouthed Democratic Party elected officials on down, everybody was talking about Oscar must be free.
Oscar
Chiasso.
Rivera.
I'm getting all tongue-tied and wrapped up.
Come on, brother.
Out of my head. Right? But that's a lesson for what organizing means, what grassroots organizing means, and what this kind of work can mean for those of us who have gone forward and have paid those dues, right? So I would hope as I wind down that y'all appreciate this work is immoral. Mm-hmm. I would dare say, mm-hmm, for anybody to try and claim that I'm down with Panther stuff, I'm down with that, and won't do a goddamn thing for the release of our comrades.
That's right.
It's immoral. And anybody talking about they're for human rights all over the world, but won't address the human rights of our people and blow that person, that government is holding that good leader hostage and won't deal with the leaders that are being held hostage here are hypocrites. To what they're talking about, we need to hold them accountable. If you can talk about political prisoners in some other country, you can also talk about political prisoners right here in these United States. Library story, 1988, I held the first book party for Asada's autobiography at the Newark Public Library. Boy, you want to know what happened after that. Well, since you like to call police officers pigs, we'll do that today.
That's right.
Pigs went crazy. Went crazy. Having a book party for Chesimard at that library? I said, yes. And I did it. How about that? Library started coming up with procedures for community use and guidelines and how much is going to they will pee in their pants, and we can't be so open with the community. We don't know what the community is going to come with. But they knew what I was coming with, because that's how I've been rolling. And that's really started my soul journey. That's when the Razz was still around, Breeze Barrow and all them started, this young boy North making some moves, he really laying y'all stuff out. It came and got me, right? And that began that whole experience with me becoming a cub of the Black Panther Party. But I took it even more personal because as a child of the 1950s and the 60s, sickle cell anemia is in my family. Mm. My first aunt that died from sickle cell anemia. Wasn't no programs, no sickle cell. The doctors didn't know what the hell it was and didn't care because it was niggas disease. Mm. Y'all heard what I said.
That's right.
That's how the establishment thinks of our people then and now. It was niggas disease, right? But the party made that
right.
A matter of national consciousness and enforce contradictions within their ranks. Learn that language. Because see, we want to see white folks argue over how they're going to fix shit. Because they got a lot of fixing to do, straight up. Right? Yeah. We want to give them something to argue about with each other. And when they get the arguments wrong, we going to be the ones correcting them. Y'all understand what
That's
I'm
right.
saying?
Come on, bro.
Right? And then at some point, they got to understand that they're going to have to get the hell out of the way and let us do what we need to do to get this shit right. Right? Because the oppressed, most oppressed in the end when it comes to fight for democracy are the best equipped to lead.
That's right.
And have earned the right to lead by virtue of ending oppression in the fight against oppression. And that's the principle I want all of y'all to learn to deal with. It ain't just majority rule, we need to rock that too. But it's also about the fight for democracy along revolutionary lines with some revolutionary principle. And the most oppressed, when they stand up and do their thing and get it on, solidarity becomes your place, and you respect the fact that they too have the capacity to
That's
lead.
Right. Right.
It wasn't Barack Obama wasn't the answer to the question. He was a good hire by the establishment.
That's right. Come on, bro.
Right?
Put it out.
We are not any more liberated than we were then. Right? So when we understand that, we'll be on our way to doing what the heck we need to do. Every generation out of its relative obscurity must determine its mission, fulfill it, or betray it, said the great Frantz Fanon, who was
right.
one of the
Come
anchors
on.
Of all, well, what we do in terms of our revolutionary ideology. I live for the last breath that I have for your generation and the next generations to take your rightful place
right.
in this place called the theater of our struggle, mm-hmm. because babies, we need you.
We need right. you.
We need you. With that, I'm gonna step out, get out the way. Let Brother Cappy take this to the next stage because he can go far further than I can, right? And carry on with your work. Call me whenever you need. All power.
I don't know how to piggyback off of that. That was a wonderful, wonderful introduction of pantherism. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to bring up one of our comrades, our allies. He talked about allies. And Bobby Seale said that we don't fight racism with racism. We fight racism with solidarity. You don't put out a fire with fire. You put out a fire with water. And that's the principle that we live by. And so we have in the New African Black Panther Party what we call the White Panther Organization. Now, the White Panther Organization obviously was given sanction by Huey P. Newton, but it was implemented by Fred Hampton, Deputy Fred Hampton of Chicago. He implemented what I talked to you about earlier, the Rainbow Coalition. And so we're going to bring up briefly for Comrade James to talk about the White Panther Organization and the role he's playing in that.
All power, brother.
All power to the people.
All power to the people.
I didn't expect to speak this morning. It was a surprise. But that's okay. I'll say a few things about what motivated me to participate in the White Panther Organization. Supremacy, the imposition of supremacy, the metaphysics of supremacy leads to one thing, which is the degeneration of knowledge, the corruption of knowledge, the loss of history, and deprivation that prevents people from being able to organize amongst themselves. So when we talk about supremacy, we're talking about power. Power invested in the individual by himself. When I talk about the degeneration of knowledge, what I mean is, if someone has claimed himself to be the holder of supremacy, it doesn't matter anymore if he's right or if he's wrong. Truth, history, science, systems that function, systems that do not function, we're no longer in a position to make those assessments. Supremacy is the power to say that I'm right and my system is correct. When we talk about European supremacy, we can talk about the ability to use cartography to draw maps and present the world in a way that is sympathetic with colonial plundering of the world and the creation of a world economic system with Europe as its center. When we look at Africa, its lines are drawn arbitrarily. The languages were imposed arbitrarily. Mathematical systems, systems of organization, systems of gender, systems of knowledge and of being were erased or subject to attempts at erasure and replaced by other systems. Supremacy is when someone says, we're going to impose these systems because they're better, and they're better because we say so, not because there's been any objective analysis of the merits of one system over another. So now the maps have been redrawn, and now they've been organized into the UN into nation states. So why are there states? And what is a state? We can go back to people like Thomas Hobbes and other European thinkers who decided that the people and the masses are barbaric, they're animalistic, and they can only be controlled if someone represses them by force. And so now, when you look around the world, if you go to the Philippines, if you go to Egypt, if you go to Morocco, if you go to South Africa, if you go to Turkmenistan, if you go to Indonesia, you have regimes that have concentrated power, concentrated wealth. They've used their security apparatus to dispossess people of their land, to marginalize them, to make them proletariats. And this is also part of a supremacist regime. They're the state because the state is right, and it's right because the supremacists say so. Economics, as we understand it, is based on capitalist economics, based on certain models of supply and demand, and equation-wise, it seems like, as they're presented, they work out. But what the equations don't account for is when militaries go to other lands and plunder them of their resources, steal from the ground, kill the people. What the models don't account for is financial speculation, derivative markets, futures markets, spot trading. Wall Street isn't even a capitalist entity anymore. It's just a mafia. It's just criminal enterprise. But we're still going to call it capitalism, even though it's not. And we're still going to call it economics, and we're still going to say it's the best system, because supremacists have told us that this is how to best run our society. And we can talk about democracy and the self-aggrandizement by the West with reference to Greece, even though the majority of nation states do not, in fact, adhere to a democratic model. And so, what all this suggests is that there's been a fundamental degeneration in knowledge. We haven't been taught to critically examine the way that systems function and the origins of their functioning. The truth of the matter is most of the systems that function have been imposed, and they've been imposed by force. And they exist not because they're the best systems, not because they serve the best interests of the people, but because someone has decided that they're best and no one has been able to hold them accountable. No one has been able to challenge them. And so as someone who's interested in decolonization, as someone who's interested in mass movements, I decided to join the White Panther Organization. I think the first two steps are, one, understanding the systems that we live in, understanding that any system is a human construct, it has a history. Most of these systems are relatively new. None of them are more than 500 years old. Understanding how we got here, and understanding that we're all political. We're all political. Political just comes from the Greek word polis, which means the people. Politics is just people doing things.
Come on, brother, you're breaking it down.
Politics is just people doing things. But if we are all participant in a system without understanding what it is and being passive, we're being political, but we don't have agency. We don't have autonomy. We don't have freedom. So the first step is to understand what we do, whether we're realizing it or not. The values that we hold, the things we think are right, the things that we think are true. The second step is to reconsider them, to study other cultures, to study our histories, to understand what was lost and what people have struggled to continue to preserve. And the third step is for ourselves to self-organize around values, around principles, around objectives, and around vision of how we would like ourselves to be organized. This is a significant undertaking. I think right now we see a preponderance of wars going around in the world. And most of these wars are fought among states, militias, or mercenaries, and even these mercenaries are basically capitalist agents. They're fought over redrawing the lines of the current cartography and the current maps that we have. Most of the battles and the wars that are going on right now are not trying to change the systems. They're just trying to seek new positions of power within those systems. Most people are not trying to change the world, they're just trying to rule the world. As soon as you decide that you want to put yourself in a position of recreating systems according to what you feel is right, and other people can do the same, then you have real power. And real power isn't the power to coerce other people into following along with you. Real power is not fear. And real power often is not even violence. Power lies in the conviction amongst people that they know what they're doing, that they've thought carefully about what to do, and that they can do it themselves without having to rely on other people. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your time. I'll pass it.
Now y'all see why he's driving this machine of pantherism along with us. Wonderful contribution. And might I add, for you cultural nationalists that's hiding in this room and that's on TV or looking at us on live stream, he been to Africa, studied in the Kwame Nkrumah Institute for a whole year. So it's not about the skin color that determines the nature of righteousness. It's about your practice. So don't come at me later on saying why you let a white man speak at a Black Panther event. This is what we do. This is what the Black Panther Party is about. I know some of y'all been seduced by the last few years thinking that it was only simply about black people. But this is a new revolutionary movement in town. I was going to say new sheriff. It's a new revolutionary movement in town, and we're putting revolution on the agenda. And so we're bringing together all kinds of people. If you're serious, how the hell you can't be a brother or a sister to someone who want to get rid of a guy, a Donald Trump? Will you turn your face aside because of a person's complexion who want to get rid of bad housing? Will you turn your face aside because a professor who want to teach you about your own history may be a different hue or a different complexion. They can tell you about the 25 dynasties in Egypt. They can tell you about Mali Songhay. They can tell you about the colonial periods in Africa, the post-colonial periods. They can tell you about imperialism, why the world is shaped and constructed to benefit white supremacy or the international ruling class. All you gotta do is study and practice it. I'm not talking about the charlatan. I'm not talking about the faker. I'm talking about someone you see everything on the ground moving garbage so that you can step in a place that's clean. Would you turn aside from that person? So don't come at me later, cultural nationalist, and talking that only black talk. I'm for black people who want justice. I'm for white people who want justice. I'm for Indian people who want justice. I'm for Latino people who want justice. I want a better world. Mm. And I don't just want black people in that world. And we have two more speakers. One of my professors at Essex County College, and also someone I met when I was in enemy prison. We didn't write often. I think we wrote one time. I met him through Socialism and Democracy, which is an academic journalist magazine. Most of us here probably wouldn't even read that. It is so theoretical. Now, remember, they use words like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Yeah, I'm telling you, big words. And Kathy is one of these magnificent Panthers from the New Haven chapter in Connecticut. He was there when Bobby Seale was locked up, Erica Huggins was locked up falsely under the counterintelligence program. And he's also a professor at Essex County College, the school that I go to. I'm not gonna bring him up just yet. He'll be pulling in the second half. Right now, we're about to go to refreshments. And then we have two more speakers, him, and we're gonna bring in our allies, another ally from the Maoist Communist Party that came all the way from Atlantic City and Philadelphia, and they're gonna talk to you about why they decided to join with the New African Black Panther Party and radically put it into effect Martin Luther King's dictum. We need a radical redistribution of wealth in this society. That means you have to destroy capitalism in order to do it. And they have decided to join with the New African Black Panther Party to make this a reality. See, this is a revolutionary party. You ain't gonna hear nothing about vote for Cory Booker here. You ain't gonna hear that here. You know, all you're gonna hear about, let's get these streets, let's clean it up, let's organize with the street forces. We also have a street force here. And they decided to get their act together. And they call themselves Open. And they are a part of our organization as our allies. And that's Conrad here, Open. Conrad back there, Open. They are security. They are street force now. Let me tell you, some of you older folks, what a street force is. A street force is a blood group, a Crip group, a Latin King group, a Nieta group. It is an organization that was organized and mobilized by street forces, people that live on a block all day. They got together and said, well, let's create an organization and let's do this within that organization. That's what these young brothers are. And they decided to join with the Panther March towards freedom. Get them down for that. Back for right after a 10-minute refreshment. Conrad Cappy will be coming up talking about revolutionary intercommunalism, and we're going to break that down for the folks in the house. And we're going to have Conrad Mason come up and talk for the People Organization, which is a wonderful new organization trying to capture the attention of white folk in their communities to fight for social justice.
Thank you for listening to this New Jersey Revolution Radio partnering presentation. To learn more about the New African Black Panther Party, go to Facebook and search for New African Black Panther Party, spell African, A-F-R-I-K-A-N. Visit us on the web at www.njrevolutionradio.com for more productions and the second part of this featured event.